After his country's disputed presidential election earlier this year, Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe expelled foreign reporters and began systematically bulldozing shanty towns, a move his opponents say is intended to punish their supporters. Mugabe has spent more than 20 years at the helm of his country. He was praised early on for building the country's education and healthcare systems and blamed more recently for the country's catastrophic economic collapse. If you have a question about what's happening in Zimbabwe, give us a call. Our number 800-989-8255, our email address totn@npr.org. Duncan Campbell is a correspondent with The Guardian newspaper who managed to stay on and report from the capital of Zimbabwe, Harare. He has recently returned to London and joins us by phone from his office there. Thanks for being with us, Duncan.
It's a pleasure.
Now, you reported on the destruction of these settlements. Tell us something about what led to that. Who were the people that were living there, and why were these settlements destroyed? Why did Mugabe order them destroyed?
Well, these are essentially small settlements on the edges of not just Harare, but also Bulawayo, Bight Bridge, even Victoria Falls. They're people who had come in from the country after losing their jobs on the farms, because the farms have, to a certain extent, to a great extent, collapsed. And so they came in looking for any kind of work. And they put up their own little shelters. They found their own jobs in the kind of alternative economy or the black market, whatever you want to call it. And they've been settled there for the last few years in, as you would describe them, shanty towns. Some of them, though, actually had built their places. They may not have had a contract for it or land title, but they built them with bricks, and some of the places that were destroyed were actually quite solid homes that had been there for a number of years.
And what was the logic? What was the government's logic in destroying these settlements?
The official version was that these were illegal settlements, that they were damaging to the infrastructure of the cities in terms of the strains they put on the drainage system and the sewage system and everything like that, and that they were a breeding ground for the illegal economy, which is essentially black market money, black market fuel, and black market food. And by clearing them out, the idea was to restore the cities and restore order and get rid of people who are indulging in illegal forms of behavior.
How many people are we talking about here who were affected?
Well, this is a very, very difficult to estimate. The government say the total in the country affected is 120,000. Some of the opposition groups have mentioned a million, which I think is far too high, because Harare itself is only 1.5 million, 2 million people. But the figure that a lot of aid agencies seem to use is about 300,000, and that's in the whole country, not just Harare.
And where are these people living now if their homes have been destroyed?
Well, some of them are in transit camps. They've set up after the UN announced that it was sending a special envoy in the wake of what was happening, the government set up a transit camp at a place called Caledonia Farm, and there are a number of people there. Some people are being looked after by churches. Some people I saw are still in the destroyed areas, and what they say they do is they put up their little shelters, maybe corrugated iron and a blanket or something like that at night, and take them down at dawn so that they don't get bulldozed. Some of them have gone back to the country, and I also understand that there were farmers recruiting people to work on their farms who had come in and were offering them transport back into the countryside, because one of the other problems was the land redistribution. Mr. Mugabe wanted to redistribute land from the white farmers, who at the time of independence, they were 1% of the population and they owned 70% of the land. So he was trying to redistribute that. The problem with that was that the people to whom he gave it, some of them war veterans, some of them, according to his opponents, his own sort of colleagues and pals, they were not experienced farmers, and as a result, a lot of those farms have just collapsed.
Duncan Campbell is a reporter for The Guardian, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Duncan, maybe you could put this in context the destruction of these settlements, put in the context of what's going on overall in Zimbabwe now.
Well, Robert Mugabe has been in power since 1980, and as you said in your introduction, he did a lot of very impressive stuff when he arrived. The education system in Zimbabwe has been one of the best in Africa. He introduced good health care, and there was an enormous amount of optimism and hope and a sort of good example set by somebody who, like Nelson Mandela, had been imprisoned by the previous white regime under Ian Smith, who's actually still alive and still living in Zimbabwe. But since those early optimistic days, he has been accused by his opponents of becoming much more involved with looking after his relatives, six of whom are now in parliament, looking after his political allies, and becoming more and more extreme against any forms of opposition. Last month, they amended the law so that now, if you publish stuff which could be seen to be prejudicial to the state, you can be jailed for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Previously, it was just 2 years. And then he's taken what I think is a very counterproductive step against allowing foreign press in, because in many ways Zimbabwe is not as in such dire straits as many other African countries, Somalia, Algeria, Rwanda, and so on. So there's not the great reason to bar everybody, and as a result of his actions against the media, I think it's rebounded on him, because people don't know whether they're being told the truth by him or not.
Mm. Let's take a call. We want to take a call now, if you can. I want to take a call now from Jean in San Francisco. Jean, go ahead.
Hi. I just have a question about whether there is dissent hidden, obviously, in Mugabe's cabinet. Are there any coalitions that might try to overthrow him, and who are they?
Yes, as it happens, one of his central committee, a guy called Pearson Malekwa, resigned when I was there at the end of last week, and he said he was perturbed and disturbed by the destruction of the shanty towns. And there is talk of a third force. The main opposition is called the MDC, the Movement for Democratic Change. It's a mixture of black and white Zimbabweans. There's now talk of the possibility of what they call a third force, which would be people leaving ZANU, the ruling party, mm-hmm. people unhappy with the current opposition, and forming this third force.
All right. Thanks so much for your call.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you about the role of South Africa here, that South Africa, you wrote that South Africa may be the one country that could possibly help out or put some kind of moral or political pressure on Mugabe, particularly Nelson Mandela. Do you think that's going to happen?
Well, there's hints of it. I mean, the president of South Africa, Thabo Mbeki, had previously very much supported Mr. Mugabe and said that the opposition was mainly orchestrated by old colonial powers like Britain, and that it was the criticism was on racist grounds. That's changed a bit. At the weekend on Sunday, he met the leader of the opposition in Pretoria in South Africa, which is the first time. And there is an indication now that South Africa is getting perturbed by what's happening in Zimbabwe, because lots of an estimated million Zimbabweans have crossed the border because the economy's come to a standstill. I mean, it was in almost sometimes the last few days I was there, there was hardly any fuel around. You couldn't get from one side of the town to the other sometimes in the evening, because people just hadn't got any fuel left. And as a result of that, there's been a bleeding of people into South Africa. So for that reason, they want some kind of change, and they want some kind of stability up there. And I think that, rather than anything else, is what will motivate them.
Yeah, and I was struck by one quote from a young man that you interviewed, who said, he's not Pol Pot and he's not Hitler, but he is brutal. referring to Mugabe.
Yes, exactly. I think there's been a lot of exaggeration, particularly in the West. You know, President Bush said, you know, he threatens U.S. interests, which is nonsense, really. And some people have said it's like Pol Pot and it's ethnic cleansing. It's not.
But it's still bad.
It's still bad, and people are frightened, and people are frightened of his CIO, his Central Intelligence Organization.
Duncan, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to have to end now.
It was a pleasure.
Duncan Campbell is a correspondent with the Guardian newspaper. He joined us by phone from his office in London. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary.